All right, we're diving deep today into a case that really gets at the heart of prisoners' rights, Lewis v. Casey. And this isn't just, you know, a footnote in legal history. This ruling went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And it really reshaped how inmates can fight for their rights. It's like, imagine, right, you're behind bars. And your only way to challenge your conviction, or maybe even just the conditions you're living in, depends on what the prison itself gives you.
It's a fascinating case because it really forces us to look at that tension between individual rights and the need to keep order in a prison.
Okay, so before we get too far into Lewis, can you give us a bit of context? Because there was that earlier case, Bounds v. Smith, that sort of set the stage for all of this.
Absolutely. So Bounds v. Smith, that was back in 1977. It laid down a really big principle. It said that prisoners, they do have a constitutional right of access to the courts. And to actually make that right mean something, prisons, they can't just leave inmates hanging. They've got to provide some way for them to actually use that right, like law libraries, legal assistance programs, or some mix of resources.
So Bounds says prisoners need tools to fight their legal battles. But then Lewis v. Casey comes in and kind of throws a wrench in things, right?
Yeah.
Like, what happened in this case?
Well, it all began with a group of inmates in Arizona. They filed this class action lawsuit against the state's Department of Corrections. Their argument was that the prison system just wasn't giving them adequate legal resources. And because of that, they were having trouble challenging their convictions or the conditions they were facing.
So they were basically saying, we have this right on paper, but you're making it impossible to use. So what happened next?
So after a long trial, the district court actually sided with the inmates. They found all kinds of problems, problems with the prison's legal resources. It wasn't up to par. But here's the twist. Even though they agreed there were these big systemic issues, they only found two specific cases where an inmate was actually hurt because of those failings.
Wait, so the court says the system is messed up, but the whole case comes down to just two guys having issues.
That's exactly why this case went all the way to the Supreme Court, because it brought up these huge questions about what kind of evidence courts need to see, you know, before they can jump in and force changes on a prison. Can they issue these big orders based on just a couple of isolated problems? Or do they need to see widespread harm?
It sounds like a power struggle almost. Like the courts are trying to figure out how far their reach goes into the prison system. And did Lewis v. Casey draw the line?
Yeah, you could say that. The Supreme Court had to deal with two big legal issues in this case. First, they had to figure out, like, what exactly do inmates have to prove to show that their right of access to the courts, that it was violated? Bounds v. Smith established the basic right. But Lewis added this really important detail. It's not enough just to have some tools. Those tools, they have to be effective.
So it's not just about having a law library. It's about having one that's stocked with the right stuff, up-to-date legal codes, and enough for everyone, right?
Right, exactly. And that's where the whole actual injury idea comes in. To win their case, inmates now have to show that the prison messed up and it directly caused them to lose a case or miss some deadline or have some other legal setback. It can't just be like, well, the library is bad, so I might have missed something. It has to be a concrete harm.
Wow, that seems tough to prove. Like, it's like having a textbook for a big exam, but all the important pages are ripped out. You technically have the book, but can you actually use it to pass?
That's a great way to put it. And that brings us to the second big question the Supreme Court dealt with. Was this massive injunction the lower courts ordered, was it even justified? Remember, they found all these problems, and they basically told the Arizona prison system, you got to overhaul this whole thing. But the Supreme Court, 5-4 vote, they said, no way, that's too much.
Ah, so that's where this judicial restraint thing comes in, huh? They thought the lower court went too far.
Absolutely. The majority opinion, written by Justice Scalia, really stressed that fixing a whole system based on two inmates having problems, that's a big overreach.
Okay, Scalia's leading the charge for the majority, but who was on the other side?
Justice Stevens wrote the main dissent, and he was joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Souter. But here's the interesting part. Justice Souter also filed a concurrence with the majority opinion. So he was kind of on both sides. And then Justice Thomas filed a separate concurrence. Each one of these opinions gives us a different take on how to understand Bounds v. Smith, like what this right of access to the courts actually means in the real world.
Hold on. Souter agreed with both sides. That's unusual, to say the least. Can you break that down a bit?
Sure. So Souter agreed with the majority that the lower court's injunction was way too broad, like they were micromanaging the prison. That's not the court's job. But he didn't totally agree with how the majority narrowed those rules for standing.
Standing. Remind me what that means again.
Oh, right. Standing basically means your right to file a lawsuit. You have to prove that you have a real stake in the case, that you've been harmed. Souter was worried that making inmates prove actual injury in such a strict way, it could make it almost impossible to challenge inadequate resources unless they'd already been seriously hurt, which by then it might be too late.
So he was trying to find a middle ground, recognizing the need for limits on lawsuits, but also making sure prisoners can actually bring legitimate complaints.
Exactly. It's a really nuanced view, and it highlights how complicated this whole issue is. The court was really trying to balance things carefully, the rights of individual prisoners and this principle of judicial restraint.
Okay, so we've got Scalia in the majority on one side, Stevens in the dissent on the other, and Souter kind of in between. Before we get too deep into what each side said, can we talk about how Lewis impacted inmates, in real life?
Yeah.
What were the real-world consequences?
The main takeaway is that Lewis made it a lot harder for prisoners to win these types of lawsuits. They can't just come to court with arguments about how the system might be failing them. They need hard evidence of specific harm caused by the prison not giving them the resources they needed.
So no more what-ifs. It has to be, I lost my case because of the prison's failings.
Yeah, pretty much. And this has really changed things. Courts are way less likely to order big changes unless there's a ton of evidence that there's widespread harm.
It's like drawing a line in the sand. The courts are saying, we won't micromanage prisons, but step in if we see clear violations. But what about those less clear-cut cases? Where does that leave prisoners who are trying to figure out a complex legal system with so few resources? That's something we'll talk about in part two of this deep dive.
Welcome back. So, as we were saying, the shift from potential harm to actual injury, it's caused a lot of debate.
Yeah, for sure. Some people see it as, protection against too many lawsuits, kind of keeps the courts from overreaching. But then others say it's made it way harder for some of the most vulnerable people to get justice.
Yeah, that's the core issue, right? Lewis basically says inmates have to do all the heavy lifting. They're the ones who have to prove they were harmed. And they often don't have the resources or even the freedom to do that.
It just seems kind of backwards. We're talking about people who are literally locked up. And then we're telling them, okay, now figure out this complicated legal system and prove you were harmed.
Right. And critics of this actual injury test say it creates this cycle. Like you can't prove harm unless you have access to legal resources, but you can't get those resources unless you prove harm.
It's like being guilty until proven innocent, but flipped. Instead of being innocent until proven guilty, it's like inmates have to prove they have a valid claim before anyone will even listen.
It's a good point. And advocates for prisoners say Lewis has basically silenced legitimate complaints. It's created a system where prisons can get away with bad legal resources without any real consequences.
So we've got these two really strong opinions. One side sees Lewis as a necessary limit on the courts. The other side sees it as a huge blow to prisoners' rights. Is there any middle ground?
Well, there are some legal scholars trying to find a way to address both concerns. They recognize that judicial overreach is a problem, but they also want to make sure prisoners' rights are protected. Some suggest that the actual injury test shouldn't be so rigid, that courts should look at more than just individual cases of harm.
So maybe look at broader evidence, like the literacy rates in the prison. If they have legal assistance programs, do prisoners even have enough time to use the resources they're given?
Right, exactly. It's about seeing the whole picture. Does the prison actually provide a fair chance for inmates to work within the legal system, or are they just pretending to?
Okay, so there's this debate about the standard of proof, but how has Lewis changed things overall for prison lawsuits?
Well, one big result is that there are fewer successful lawsuits about prison conditions. Inmates have to show they've been personally harmed by things like overcrowding, bad medical care, or excessive force from guards. Just showing that these conditions exist isn't enough.
It's a tough situation, especially with the power dynamics in prisons. Inmates might not want to speak up against guards because they're afraid of retaliation, and even if they do, they might not know how to document it or build a strong legal case.
Absolutely. It puts the burden on the people who are most vulnerable and least able to navigate the system.
Like, Lewis accidentally made things harder for the people who need the most help. Advocates point out that this has really affected people with mental health problems, language barriers, disabilities, or those with limited education, the ones who really need legal help.
It's an important point, and it raises bigger questions about equality in our justice system.
We've talked about how Lewis makes it harder to win these lawsuits, but has it changed what kinds of claims are brought up at all? Are some issues now completely off limits because of this actual injury rule?
It's definitely harder to bring claims that aren't directly about being convicted or locked up. Like, if an inmate wants to challenge a rule about religious materials or contacting their family, that's a lot tougher now. They have to show they were specifically harmed by those rules.
So if a prison bans religious practice or makes it super hard to call family, it might not even be seen as a violation of rights unless an inmate can prove they were specifically harmed by it. That seems like a really narrow view of what's considered a legitimate legal issue for someone in prison.
Yeah, that's the thing about how Bounds v. Smith was interpreted in Lewis. The focus got a lot narrower. It's all about making sure inmates can challenge their sentences or the conditions they're living in, and less about those other fundamental rights that might be affected by prison rules.
It seems like Lewis v. Casey really changed the landscape for prisoners' rights. It makes us think about what's considered a legal claim, the balance of power between courts and prisons, and what access to justice actually means when you're incarcerated.
You put it perfectly, and that's what makes Lewis v. Casey such a fascinating case, but also a controversial one. It doesn't have easy answers. It forces us to think about these complex issues and some uncomfortable truths about our system.
Okay, we're going to take a minute to get ready for the final part of this deep dive. When we come back, we'll be exploring the long-term effects of Lewis v. Casey and what the future might hold for prison lawsuits here in the U.S.
And we're back. We've been unpacking this really influential case, Lewis v. Casey. It's about prisoners' rights, the power of the courts, and that tricky balance between individual freedom and the need for authority.
And like we've seen, Lewis v. Casey wasn't just about settling one legal argument. It really started a national conversation about what justice means for people in prison. We've talked about the actual injury test, how Bounds v. Smith was narrowed, and that uphill battle inmates now have to fight for their rights. But to wrap up our deep dive today, I want to kind of zoom out. Like, what's the lasting impact of Lewis v. Casey? How has it shaped these prison lawsuits over the past few decades?
Well, one of the biggest things is that the focus of these lawsuits has changed. Before Lewis, there was more emphasis on fixing the whole system. Courts were okay with issuing big orders to deal with widespread problems. But after Lewis, the focus shifted to individual complaints. Courts are less likely to step in unless there's proof that a specific inmate's rights were violated.
So instead of trying to fix the whole prison, it became more about handling each individual problem.
Yeah, you could put it that way. And that change has had both good and bad results. On the one hand, it's led to a more focused approach. Courts are spending their energy on cases where there's clear harm, which some people see as more efficient and less intrusive.
I can see that. But I'm guessing there's another side to this, right?
Oh, for sure. While focusing on individual cases might seem reasonable at first, it's actually made it a lot harder for inmates to challenge bigger systemic problems. Even when there's evidence of issues all over the prison, like guards using too much force or not enough medical staff, it's really hard to meet that actual injury standard, especially if inmates are scared to speak up or they just don't have the means to prove what's happening.
So even if something's wrong everywhere, it might not get fixed unless someone's willing to risk speaking out. That doesn't seem right.
It's definitely a concern, and it makes people wonder if Lewis gave too much power to prison authorities. Like, now it's harder to hold them accountable when they fail to protect inmates' constitutional rights.
It seems like Lewis v. Casey kicked off this complicated and kind of heated debate about what courts should be doing about prison conditions.
Yeah, definitely. And that debate's not going away anytime soon. Lewis is still a really controversial case, and there are people discussing its impact, whether it got things right. Some legal experts and advocates even say the Supreme Court should take another look at it and maybe change the actual injury test.
Like, what kind of changes are they suggesting?
Some say courts should be open to looking at a wider range of evidence. You know, they understand that prisons have unique power dynamics, and it's hard for inmates to get the usual kind of proof. Others think the bar for proving harm should be lower, especially when it's a systemic problem. They get that requiring individual harm in those situations could mean those big problems never get fixed.
So they're basically saying the courts need to be more flexible and understand the challenges that people in prison face. But I bet there are people who don't want to mess with the actual injury test at all, right? Like we talked about, there are those concerns about too many lawsuits and courts overstepping their boundaries.
Of course, there's always another side. The folks who support the actual injury test, they think it was a necessary step. They say it put a limit on how much courts can interfere with prisons and tell them what to do. They argue that this standard makes sure courts only intervene when someone's rights are clearly violated and not just getting involved in policy debates about how prisons should operate.
So it's this constant back and forth between wanting to protect prisoners' rights and wanting courts to be more hands-off.
That's exactly. And how we decide to draw that line affects millions of people in prisons across the U.S. It's a really important conversation with real consequences.
Well, as we wrap up our look at Lewis v. Casey, what's the big takeaway for our listeners? What should they be considering as they think about all these complex sides to this issue?
I think the biggest thing Lewis v. Casey shows us is that even when you have a constitutional right, like the right to access the courts, actually using that right effectively isn't a given. It depends on a lot of things: legal standards, procedures, and the power dynamics involved. Lewis v. Casey really highlights that tension between individual rights and institutional power. It reminds us that fighting for justice can be really tough, especially for people who are marginalized and don't have a lot of power.
It makes you think.
Yeah.
Lewis v. Casey leaves us with some questions to consider. Is the actual injury test really fair, or does it block people in prison from getting justice? How do we balance the idea of limited court involvement with the need to protect everyone's constitutional rights, even those behind bars?
These are really big questions that will keep being debated in courts, legislatures, and even classrooms all over the country. And at the end of the day, they're questions we all need to think about as citizens, especially when we think about what justice really means in a country that imprisons more people than anywhere else in the world.
That's a powerful thought to leave us with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Lewis v. Casey. It's a case that's had a long-lasting impact, and its effects will continue to be felt for years to come.